Chapter 22. He was awakened by her absence the following morning. The emptiness of the room pulled him along to consciousness like a river current, and he felt through his back that the set of the mattress was incorrect for her body. The mattress was the first thing to tell him she was not there. He looked around the dim room at the jumble of wrappers on the table, at the hollowness of Sigma's immobile form. Those senses that were available to him during sleep reminded him now that she was not in the bathroom. The motel room was cold and empty, like a cast-off husk. He sat up and scooted to the foot of the bed. He remained there a while, blinking his eyes clear, and ran a hand through his hair to lay it down. His clothes felt stale and clung to his body. He began to regret not taking Dora's advice, which was to disrobe and cocoon himself in a sheet if he felt so precious about sharing the bed with her. He would not hear of it, and after he saw her deposited beneath the blankets, lay down on top of the blankets on the edge of the bed, perching there on his shoulder and hip like a bird. She had laughed at him and asked if he was queer. The little room had been filled with her mirth when she said this, like she could fill a space with the essence of herself without trying. And when he did not answer, the mirth leaked away until only discomfort remained. Finally, she was very serious and asked, "What is it?" "I'm making this as right as I can. The more time I spend with you, the more I watch you, the more I'm convinced you could be my daughter."
"Hardly.
You're hardly that old."
"No. If I had made a mistake very early in life, it could be so."
"I'm a mistake, huh?"
"Stop it, you know what I mean. Say a younger sister, then."
She was quiet for a long time, and he started to think she was sleeping. Then he felt a hand on his shoulder, and she said,
"It isn't that. You're thinking of her, aren't you? The woman in the hallway pictures." "Please go to sleep, Dora."
"I'm sorry I called you queer. I didn't mean it. I'm sometimes harder than I want to be."
"It's all right. The word is insulting. To be accused of its definition is not. Go to sleep."
"I'm sorry anyway. I guess after a while you get used to men wanting to stick it in you. It's like everything. Like the whole world. The whole world and everything in it wants to stick it in you. When you find someone who doesn't want to do it, you look at them like they're the broken one and not everything else. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I laughed. Go to sleep, Dora. Please."
He knocked the sleep from his eyes as he stumbled to the wash basin. He turned on the bathroom light and examined himself in the mirror, the stubble patching his face and disheveled hair. There were more wrinkles around the eyes and in the cheeks than he liked to see. It seemed there were more wrinkles in these places every time he looked. He turned on the faucet and told himself the wrinkles were from sleeping hard.
"When did she leave?" he asked.
1 hour 46 minutes ago."
Giles splashed some water on his face, and his shoulders pulled up high from the icy shock. He shuddered and asked,
"Where did she go?"
"I do not know."
"You didn't ask?"
"I did not."
"Why, Sigma? Why wouldn't you ask?"
"Her whereabouts are not my concern. You are my concern, Giles."
He shut off the faucet and leaned against the sink. When his frustration was sufficiently bottled, he said,
"I see.
Sigma, what if she had decided to go to the authorities and tell them where we are? After last night's revelation. Suppose she decided that killing is a crime too great to live under and thought she could secure immunity by informing to the police."
"Oh.
Indeed, Sigma.
Oh. You believe she would do this?"
Giles thought a moment and said, "Honestly, I don't. She's taken everything so easily. Her attitude and so forth. This all feels like it's very normal to her."
"Then you admit it is unnecessary to keep apprised of her movements?"
He sighed and said, "Sigma, you will guard her like you guard me, do you understand? You will do so, or I'll do everything I can to sabotage your little mission."
"At the risk of your own freedom?"
Giles forced his hands to relax.
"Yes."
"I see."
"Good, Sigma. That's good. I'm going to have a shower now."
He removed his clothing and draped it over the air conditioner in hopes of blowing out the dankness of last night's panic and the grease of the final meal which had excreted through his pores as he slept. He crossed the room to the shower naked, subconsciously assigning to Sigma the agency of a family pet. He found in the bathroom that there was no soap or shampoo. When he checked the sink under the basin and found it likewise empty, he rolled his eyes, understanding that water alone must do the job. The water was hot, at least, after it ran for several minutes, and he passed his hands over his body as he stood beneath the showerhead, trying to push the oils down and away. The hardness of the water helped in creating the illusion of cleanliness, causing his hands to stick and drag. He noticed the shower curtain twitch as he worked. He pulled at the edge of the plastic, and a roach as long as his thumb scurried up the material, darted along the curtain rod, and ended finally up in the corner where two walls met the ceiling. There it remained, eyeing Giles balefully. Its presence did not bother him. He felt as if this were a place made for its presence, and that he was now a creature made for this place. Together they had equal claim, and one should not seek to supplant the other. "Easy, old man," Giles muttered. "A moment, and then I'll be out of your life." It was a deep truth he felt. That morning, all things felt deeply true. He dried off with a towel so threadbare it was transparent, and was surprised he actually felt clean. The process, or perhaps it was the water itself, had a freshening effect, and when he crossed the room to retrieve his clothing, he was straighter than before. He pulled on his clothes, bracing at the touch of the chill fabric, and tying his shoes wished bitterly for a toothbrush.
"You must wear the lenses, Giles."
"No, I won't be connected to their system."
"You will not be. You will be connected to me."
"I'm sorry?"
"I have learned that when you say you are sorry, what it usually means is that you require further explanation. Is that the case now?"
"Jesus. Yes, it is."
"I will pair with the lenses and function as a proxy between you and the cloud. All beacon, telemetry, guardian, AdSense metrics, and similar tracking data will be arrested at my firewall. I will have the ability to forward information to you and route data requests from you out into the world. It also affords me the ability to track your location and status at all times."
He looked at the tiny pearlescent domes on the dresser by the television. They stared up at the ceiling like dead fish eyes, and straining his vision, he could see the inner whorls of fine white filament like the spinning valleys of a fingerprint. There they would lay, as lifeless as their previous owner, until the lysosome in his tears quickened their inner workings. "Those were pulled from the eyes of a dead man," Giles said in distaste.
"Run them under the faucet."
He snorted at the hoplite's practicality. He wondered if he could reasonably advance further argument, but decided ultimately to let it go. The advantages were beyond dispute. He scraped them carefully into his hand and held them under the running faucet at the basin. As water ran through his fingers, he said, "I'm not familiar with the care of these things. Will it damage them if I scour their surface with a fingertip?"
"No, they are quite resilient."
"Good," he said, and began to agitate them between his thumbs and index fingers. As he worked, Sigma came up from behind him to watch his actions in the mirror. Giles glanced up at his own reflection, looked at the form towering over his right shoulder, and rolled his eyes.
"The procedure is to spread the upper and lower lid of the eye with one hand while the other, balancing a lens on the pad of a finger, taps it in."
Hands formed of metals and composites rose in the mirror and pantomimed the activity Sigma described, gingerly, as though he wanted to do the job for Giles personally. Giles stared at Sigma's reflection until the hands dropped out of sight.
"Sorry."
"All right." He pushed the door to the bathroom open wider to get as much reflected light into the area as he could manage. In response, two LED flood beams popped from Sigma's shoulders and blinded him.
"Jesus fuck, Sigma!"
"Apologies, Giles. I have reduced beam intensity for this environment." Giles blinked into the mirror, trying to squeeze away the purple blotches that hung in his vision like fat, sick insects, and said,
"Start on a low setting next time, can't you?"
"Apologies."
"Christ. I'm certainly glad no one was trying to kill me. I'm starting to think Dora was right. You are a goddamn toaster. Sincere apologies."
He blinked into the mirror some more, and it soon transpired that the blotches had spread over to one side so that he could see on the other. He rolled his eyes around in their sockets, hoping things might improve, but they did not.
Fine. Here we go.
He spread the lids of his right eye and moved the lens toward the pupil. It required a few minutes to get the first one seated. He kept blinking when it came into contact, and the thing would fold over on itself like a shaved flap of skin. Then he would have to dig it out, wash it again, and prod at it until it opened back up. His eye watered like a sprinkler, and tears ran freely down his cheek. He went through three such of these sequences, cursing profoundly, until he had the right lens in place.
Good, Sigma urged. Now the left one.
Could we not just use a single lens? There are people who use only one.
Those are specially made. A set of two are calibrated to operate as a set. If you have only one, you will only have half of the information.
Hell. Fine. He fiddled with the other, soon panting in frustration and shaking his hands out wildly to keep from putting a fist through the glass of the cheap mirror. He hated how irrational those damn things made him. As he blinked his eyes wildly, praying the left lens would slide into place, he fantasized about tossing them into a shredder.
I have them, I think.
Here, can you see? He turned and looked up at Sigma's turret as though stretching for a kiss, and after a few seconds the hoplite said, "You appear to have finally succeeded." Giles laughed through a wry sneer and said, "Great. It feels like I've jammed soup bowls into my eyes."
"So now what?"
"They have been dormant for some time. You must wait for sufficient absorption to..."
Whoa. There they go.
Something's happening now. His field of view was interrupted by a gauzy disturbance, not so much static as a transparent overlay, like green tissue. It faded slowly, and when it was gone, only a single pinprick of green remained. He stared at it in wonder. It seemed to hover at a distance impossibly far away, yet he felt he could reach out and touch it with his hand, felt as if it floated only a foot away from the bridge of his nose. It was so small, it nearly vanished, but it was as clear to Giles as the sun in the sky, the illumined tip of a microfine needle that lived within his mind. He looked about the room and found that the pinprick moved with his eyes, floating away to rest on the far wall, rushing up close to dance over the back of his hand.
"Do you see the reticle?"
Giles nodded slowly.
"Yes. It's quite amazing. I've had it described to me before, but I'd never realized how it truly appeared."
"Good. I have arrested initialization at the start of the boot cycle, which is why you see only the reticle. I must now make some adjustments to the lens's function. Please stand by." There was a green flash like the explosion of a nuclear chemical fire, paralyzing in brightness. Yet he felt no pain. The glare diminished rapidly, darkened, and then the room darkened. It continued to darken, until he hovered in a pure black void.
"Sigma?
Sigma, I can't see."
"Yes, this is expected. Please stand by."
"You might have warned me, you obtuse fuck."
"I did say adjustments need to be made."
"You will go blind, Giles. The proper fucking warning is to say you will go fucking blind, fucking Giles."
"You will go fucking blind, fucking Giles. It is temporary."
Giles felt around with his hands until he found the dresser and began to step across the room in search of a chair. He grumbled as he went.
"Clueless walking malfunction of a woman's personal goddamn massage device. Gormless piss pot with legs. It'd be better served as an amusement park animatronic."
"Not so, Giles. I am capable of only some of the functions you have suggested."
"Shut up, and let me know when I'll be getting my sight back, ass."
"Apologies, Giles. Did you wish me to shut up or to inform you when—"
"When I have my sight back, damn you. Say when I'll have my sight back, son of a bitch."
"Understood. Please stand by." The loss of sight yielded to sight's discovery, fading in slowly. And where the darkness left, behind it, shapes remained.
"You should now be registering visual activity."
"Yes, it's coming back now."
"As anticipated.
I have successfully paired with your device and have disabled a number of background functions intended to relay data back to various cloud-based server instances. Those functions that cannot be disabled have been blocked. You may now safely use your lenses."
His vision had cleared back to normalcy.
"What happened to the reticle?"
"Nothing. It is still there."
"I can't see it, though."
The system is fully calibrated. You must look for it now.
What?
You must focus as though trying to see it. The manual suggests looking as if you are trying to see it through a fog. Giles did as suggested, and after a few seconds saw the green prick of light on the far wall.
I'll be damned, he breathed, and allowed it to dissipate.
He practiced this new talent a few times, learning how to bring it back and make it go away whenever he pleased.
How the hell do they know when I want to see it?
The act of looking for it causes the internal structures of your eye to move in specific ways. The muscles of your lids contract. The lenses are attuned to these movements and interpret your desire accordingly.
This is so normal, Giles said. I was always under the impression there was constant noise.
Typically there is. Thus far I have blocked 27 pop-ups from displaying.
27? You're joking.
I am not. There are higher tiers of service in which such advertisements are eliminated. Many users opt for just receiving the pop-ups and dialing system transparency to a maximum setting. It does not make them go away entirely, however.
Well, okay. Thanks for blocking all my spam, then.
So what can these things do besides make me blind and scare the shit out of me? How do I control them? Functions that cannot be interpreted via eye movements are controlled through voice. Please attach the sound nodes now. Giles retrieved the small black nubs from the dresser and looked them over. They were each half the size of a fingernail.
Stick them anywhere?
Anywhere on bone. Feel behind your ear for the hardest point where the skin is most thin. Press the dermal contact pad of each node against the skin and apply moderate pressure for 30 seconds. You should feel slight heat at the contact sites. When you do, you are free to let go. They will be securely affixed in place. Giles did as instructed, noting in a distracted fashion that the heat behind his ears made the bend of his neck feel loose and comfortable. He removed his fingers and looked at Sigma. A voice in the center of his mind said, "Can you hear me, Giles?" He jerked in his seat, nodded, and muttered, "Christ." "Excellent," said the voice. "All systems online."
"Why do you sound different over the nodes?" Giles asked.
"It's because I'm being piped directly into your head through bone conduction. Your skull transfers lower registers and bass more efficiently, so that's what you hear most."
"Okay, makes sense," Giles said.
"Same reason my voice sounds terrible in a recording." "Note also that you needn't speak at full volume to communicate with me. You may speak with me as always. However, whispering will also be picked up and interpreted correctly." Giles nodded.
"Okay, great. So, now I have it all set up. What do I do with it?"
"The primary intent is for me to monitor your status at all times. You may request information of any sort, however. As an example, here's an overlay of an area map." His vision was screened by a top-down street map of the surrounding city, centered on the motel room, traced in lines of finest glowing green. Small flashing beacons with name tags floated slowly along the streets, and he soon realized these were other lens users. Giles looked over the map and discovered he could scroll it around if he stretched his vision far enough.
"My God," he whispered. "These things are incredible."
"Yes. They're quite good for augmented reality applications as well."
"It's too bad they're monochrome," Giles said.
"I understand the full-color lenses can do VR as well." "Yes, but they're almost prohibitively expensive," the voice thrummed. "Give it a few more years."
"Can this be done in 3D?
"Of course. I'm controlling the rendering. I can present the information however I choose." The lines of the map tilted away from him, flattened, and spread out in all directions. He stood from his chair, stumbling a bit as he looked through the motel walls into the rendered world beyond, mouth hanging, turning slowly in a circle. The wire mesh of the digital world remained anchored in place, and he saw the thin green outline of streets, the edges of buildings, and even the movement of vehicles. Each street he focused on presented its name, every building its address and business. And when he focused on the slow-moving beacon of a pedestrian, an overlay materialized, showing names, age, place of residence.
"I'm seeing a lot of personal information," Giles said. "Way more than I should have access to."
"Yes, I'm providing you with elevated permissions."
"I don't like it."
"I can understand your misgivings. However, it's critical to maintain this elevated level of awareness.
We need to keep you alert to your surroundings, as well as the people sharing them with you.
I see, Giles said.
He was distracted by a new flurry of noise on the overlay, the presentation of which was unfamiliar. Just through the wall within the parking lot outside, he saw explosions of concentric circles like rapidly spreading ripples in a pond. They were large and moved over the ground rapidly, then came to a stop between two beacons marked as vehicles. The pulsing circles disappeared and then reappeared shortly after, only now they were small and began to float toward him at a slower rate.
Sigma? Sigma, what the hell am I seeing?
You're rendering this right. You know what it is?
What you're seeing is a detected presence not connected to the cloud. Lens users do not have this capability. It is something I'm providing to you exclusively through the interpretation of my own sensory data. The rapid expansion of concentric circles is how I've chosen to represent an echo.
An echo?
The circles had stopped outside the door.
Yes. What I'm showing you is all based on sound, after all. You needn't be concerned over the person outside. The movement pattern and audible signature suggest that Dora has returned.
A knock sounded at the door.
Just a minute, Giles called. Then, in a lowered voice,
how was she moving so quickly a moment before?
She was in some sort of vehicle. The vehicle itself is not connected to the cloud, so I assume she retrieved an older model.
Son of a goddamn bitch, Giles groaned.
He yanked the door open, shocking Dora, and said, you stole another car? She stood blinking at him and then asked,
how the hell did you know that?
Get in here, he waved. He tried to slam the door behind her, but the hydraulic arm pulled it up short, causing it to shut with an unimpressive click. She passed into the room, arranged herself at the table like a queen, and began to pick at the leavings of the previous night with little interest. He watched her, expecting an answer, and when she gave none, he sat down in the other chair and said,
well?
I'll answer you when you apologize.
Yes.
I was out this morning risking my neck for you, not counting feeding you last night in case you forgot. I'll remind you that I can disappear at any time. And now that we know I don't even show in the footage they have on you, I'm beginning to wonder why I don't do just that.
Giles folded his arms across his chest and asked,
why don't you then?
She looked at him a moment and then shook her head. She selected a stale tortilla chip from a styrofoam box and nibbled the end thoughtfully. Then her eyes narrowed, and she leaned forward in her chair. She studied him closely and said,
you've put them on.
He looked back at Dora, unsure what to say, and as he watched, those exploding concentric circles formed again, issuing small and proud from the center of her chest in a deep rhythm. He thought of a time before when he had searched for a heartbeat as a compulsion, the dearest sound in the world, how he would place his ear against her back as she slept and just listen to that beat for as long as he could, until sleep found him. He looked away from Dora and asked,
do they look very bad?
They make you look like everyone else. It is very good, and I dislike it.
He shrugged.
I'm sorry for earlier. I was worried. That you have stolen a car alarmed me. Why would you do this? We have one already. The one I got us is very old. It is in good condition and will run, which is nice, but it is very old. We call a car like this an abuelo because it was grandfathered in. All the newer vehicles must be traceable, you see. The abuelos, though, they may stay old. It's good for us. Any of us can drive it in case something happens to the toaster.
I provide for several functions in excess of a toaster.
And we won't need him around to keep it off cloud.
I see.
Gas or electric?
Dora sneered.
Gas, of course.
Well, that'll be tricky. Gas is not cheap.
It has a full tank. We can drive it empty and get something new after. It's better not to hold on to it very long. Someone loved this car. It will be reported soon, if not already.
He considered what she had said for a moment, and then pulled back a corner of the curtain so he could see outside.
Which one is... Oh, Jesus Christ.
There's something wrong?
Oh, nothing. Oh, nothing at all. I'm sure a red race car with a giant hoplite in the front seat won't attract any attention at all. Completely inconspicuous.
God, what year is that thing?
2015 or 16, I guess.
The audible signature of the vehicle as it approached was consistent with a Chrysler Hemi engine, Hellcat variant. Dora nodded at Sigma and smiled.
Good ear.
Oh, yes, Giles repeated. I won't draw any attention driving that thing at all.
Not so fast, buddy, Dora laughed. Can you drive a stick?
Well, no.
Then I guess you won't have to worry about drawing attention driving it, will you?
He looked at her suspiciously and asked,
Do you have a license?
No,
but I can drive a stick. Don't get bent out of shape. It was the only one I could find. Trust me, I would have been happy with something more timid. The only people hanging on to gas vehicles anymore are collectors or the poor, though, so the selection gets limited. Besides, we don't want you up front anyway. They're looking for you, not me. We'll stick you in the back. Sigma can ride passenger.
She glanced at the hoplite, then looked up at the turret as if gauging his height.
We'll have to slide the seat as far back as it will go, I guess.
We'll recline it all the way back. Anyone looking in from the outside will see only me. Giles glanced out the window again, grimaced, and let the curtain fall back into place. It's still going to stand out. You said the owner was likely to make a thing over this? She shrugged.
Yeah, but police always drag their feet on stolen property if the car isn't chipped. I think they feel like it's the owner's fault for not upgrading. Anyway, it won't be a problem immediately. I swapped out the plates with someone else's car. That won't be reported for months, if at all. No one ever notices their plates were lifted if you replace them with another set. I put some tape over the VIN, too, so your fancy little cameras out there can't see.
Giles became pensive as he thought it over. It made him nervous, and another weight added onto a growing pile. He felt within his mind as though he balanced a mountain of rubble in his outstretched arms, leaning this way and that to prevent it from toppling, and new things kept being stacked at the top. That Hemi outside was another stacked thing. He tried to recall the last time his guts had not been a churning mess and found it a challenge. It seemed he had felt this way since before he could remember.
So, we need to get that feed data, Dora said through a mouthful of cold rice. I've been out solving the car problem all morning. Your turn now. Solve this.
I need to make a call, Giles said. I know someone who can get access. If we're lucky, we don't even have to leave this spot. I'll get in touch with him, give him the time lock index, and he can upload it into data escrow.
We should leave, Dora said. That car we boosted last night is still out in the lot. We should take the abuelo, head out of town, and find a new place. You always want to keep moving if they're looking for you.
Giles cleared his throat in some discomfort and nodded.
Fine, then. We probably don't want to cross state lines, though. I understand laws get complicated when you do.
Dora laughed, her voice a high symphony, and said,
You're a little beyond that, Giles. Do you recall? You're a murderer now.
The hell I am. I'm getting clear of that just as soon as I make that call.
Hey, Sigma, is it still safe for me to call out with these things?
Yes.
Good. So, as I said, I'll get the murder cleared. There's still everything else that needs to be settled up. Stolen cars, property damage. I'm not giving anyone more ammo to use against me. I've seen prosecutors become real assholes over such things.
Dora nodded.
This is a good point. I've seen it as well.
Sigma, how about that call? Please provide the contact information for the person you wish to reach. Giles recited the information as requested, then jumped when Reggie's overlay materialized at the bottom left corner of his vision. He was distracted by this, craning his neck around and looking at various points in the room, amazed at how well the overlay maintained its position, like a physical entity anchored to his eyeball. It seemed incredible to him how similar it was to the old VR games from his youth. The experience was intuitive and effortless. He suspected it was why the technology had become so ubiquitous, and all it had cost was the public's final shred of privacy, which they seemed not to be using in any case.
Hello? Hello, who is this and how may I help you?
It was Reggie's voice, only it was Reggie's voice inside of his head. It was richer, more resonant. Giles wondered if this was how Reggie heard himself.
Reggie, it's me.
Giles? Holy shit.
Who the hell is Corbin?
Corbin?
This pop-up says I'm talking to a guy named Corbin.
Oh, right. Forget about that now, okay? Listen. It's obvious I didn't arrive last night.
Have you seen? Are you kidding?
You're all over the fucking news right now. Is this real? It can't be, right? I don't want to believe my eyes.
Giles closed his eyes and became distracted again when he discovered the world map overlay along with Reggie's contact card were still visible.
Christ, but with enough practice he could get around in the pitch dark with these.
It's not real, Reggie. This is some sort of setup. Someone out there seems pretty pissed at me.
There's video, though.
Yes, there is, and you know exactly how much that's worth anymore. Honestly, Reggie, how long have we known each other? Does this seem even remotely possible to you?
No, Reggie admitted. No, I can't say it does.
Giles opened his eyes and started breathing again. He saw that Dora was sitting on the edge of her seat staring at him, looking the way people do when they eavesdrop on one half of a conversation. He looked away to keep focused. He had enough sensory input as it was. Her golden eyes were too much.
You're suggesting someone infiltrated the Guardian data, then, Reggie stated.
Yes. I need you to pull the archives for me. I have the time lock index. The main thing is that I need it to be the encrypted feed, fresh off the DSP.
I can't, Giles.
His throat locked shut, killing the rest of the words he had. He tried to regain his footing, but felt within the pounding of his mind that all of the ground that ever existed had washed away.
Reggie, man, I know how we left it, but this is so critical. It's the only way I'm going to prove—
No, Giles, you don't understand. It has nothing to do with all that. Believe me, if I could do it, I would.
All remote access has been revoked. They locked us out this morning.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit in Christ. He did not care for the way his voice sounded, whether inside his skull or not. It had a waver to it like fabric decayed in a desert wind.
I know, Giles, I know. I wish it were different. The only way to get what you need is to go to the archives.
Anagnorisis, Giles muttered.
Yes.
What is it? Dora demanded. What's wrong?
Who is that? Reggie asked.
Giles waved her away and said, It's nothing. It's the TV. I've just muted it. He flashed his teeth in a snarl and dragged a finger across his throat. Dara's face flushed angrily, but she said nothing more.
Where are you, Giles?
I'd rather not say.
Fine, don't say. Are you safe, though?
I think so.
Good. Look, what if I get on a plane and head out to—
No.
Giles?
No, Reggie. No chance. Already I've been shot at and chased across my neighborhood. If someone finds out you're trying to—
There's someone at the door, Giles.
A knock sounded from behind, slow and metered out like a metronome. Giles looked past the door into the overlaid world and saw a nameplate that said only Bellin. There was no surname nor any other data to go with the name. He stared at the surface of the door, at the strange plate floating beyond, at the green wire frame of the outside lot. He closed his mouth and swallowed hard.
Reggie, I'd better call you back.
Hang on.
Giles nodded at Sigma, and the call terminated. He patted the air with his hand to signal they should all be quiet, went to the door, and looked out the peephole. The dead-eyed glare of the round-faced man looked back at him, fish-eyed through the distortion of the peephole. The wind leaked out of Giles in a soft He wanted to warn the others but lacked the strength. Dora was standing behind him now. He felt her there like a warm ghost, and she whispered, Who is it? Through the peephole, Giles saw the man reach into his jacket, and the dead eyes never wavered. Giles thought he might forget that face completely as soon as he looked away, but eyes such as those could never be forgotten. The way they looked through that hole, it made him feel like he was seen, like he was seen by all the eyes of the world, and all of those eyes had decided he must not be allowed.
Giles, who is it?
The man with the round face pulled a pistol from his jacket and pointed it at the peephole.